All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin, or I should say, let's continue. So we are still in Kapitel Tesvav in Tehillim. This is now our eighth shir on this particular Kapitel, and the truth is, it doesn't look like we're going to finish anytime soon. But all right, no rush. So remember again, Mizmor LeDavid. Excuse me. Mizmor LeDavid, Hashem Yagor BeOhalecha, Miyishkon Bahar Kodshecha. So remember again, just to give us a little bit of a review to create a proper context, David HaMelech is asking the fundamental question, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mi Yagor BeOhalecha, which refers to what? Who will live in your tent? What does that refer to? Oh my gosh, all right, we're going to have to start all over. All right, Olam Hazeh, this world, right? Remember again, we saw the Al-Shechu explain that Yagur from Lashon Ger, right, which means a temporary dwelling, Ohel, a tent as opposed to a bayis, refers to ultimately the temporal part of existence, which refers to man's life in this world. So, Mizmor David Hashem Yagur Ba'alacha, who will dwell in your tent? Meaning, who will have a successful Olam Hazeh? Mishkon Bahar Kodshecha. That refers to Olam Haba. Good. Right? After we took out the Olam Hazeh, there's not much left. Right? So, Mishkon Ba'alecha. So remember, Shishkon Shachan, which means to dwell, permanent residence, Kod Bahar Kodshecha, the mountain fixed. So David HaMelech asking the fundamental question, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how is it that a person could have a successful Olam Hazeh and the successful Olam Haba? As we pointed out, remember that in Judaism, we're not just concerned with an afterlife, we are not just concerned with what happens after 120. Interestingly enough, we are actually more concerned with what happens in this world, because ultimately, that's the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to focus on. How we create a successful Olam Hazeh, and of course, the byproduct of a successful Olam Hazeh is having a beautiful Olam Haba. So we've been going through all these attributes for the last eight shiurim, holich tamim, foel tzedek, dover emes bil vavo, lo raga lishono, lo rasa l'reihu ra'ah, excuse me, v'cherpa lo nasa al karovo. So that's all what we've accomplished in the last couple of weeks. This week we're going to focus on the underlined, please. Nivze be'inav nim'as, v'esyirei Hashem yichabed. Literally translated, David HaMelech says, what are the virtues to which we must aspire to? A base nivza be'inav nim'as. We'll just use a translation here. A base person is despised in his eyes. Ve'esyirei Hashem yichabed. But he honors the God fearing. Okay. So on the most basic level, what would you say that means? What's just your reaction to that? Okay, so first of all, it doesn't seem these that great of a chiddush. But the truth is, in all fairness, neither are any of the other things that David HaMelech said. Remember, part of the beauty of Sefer Tehillim is that, you know, like the Mesilas Yesharim, as Ramosh Chaim Lutzato writes in his introduction to Mesilas Yesharim. So, you know, I think I mentioned this before. You know, it's interesting that people often skip introductions. But certainly in Sifrei Kodesh, the introductions are the most important things, because the introductions set the tone and ultimately tell you what the author hopes to accomplish. So Maseilas Yesharim, Moshe Chaim Litzato writes, so of course you have to read, if you haven't read it yet, go back and read the introduction. So the Ramchal writes that the truth is, there's nothing you're going to find in my Sefer that is a Chiddush. There are no new ideas that are expressed here. Oh, thank you very, very much. Thank you. It's profound. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'll put it down right over. It's perfect. No, it's good. I'm going to put it right there. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakol Nieh B'Tvaro. Thank you very much. So the Ramchal writes that there are no chidushim in my sefer. He said, everything you'll find in Mesilas Yesharim, you've heard of it before. There's nothing you're going to say, oh, I never thought of that, I never heard of that. But the Ramchal says something amazing. He says, sometimes it's those very things that to us seem so obvious that the things that kind of fall by the wayside. You know, the major, major bombshell ideas we all remember. But the little nuanced ideas that should be part of everyday existence are the ones that are so often neglected. So the Ramcha writes, my entire purpose is not to give you chidushim, it's not to introduce novel ideas, it's to remind you of the little things that all too often we forget. The truth is, the Ramcha didn't come up with this on his own. That's really what David HaMelech does in Tehillim. Right? There's very little chidushim. You're not going to read something and say, oh, I never knew that, I never thought of that, I never heard of that. This is all things that we're familiar with. But at the end of the day, what David HaMelech understood is his job is to remind us of the fundamentals. So all of these things, so Tanya's point is very well taken. Nivza be'enam nimas asirei Hashem yichabei, a base person is despised in his eyes and he honors the God theory. Okay, great. So obviously, David HaMelech must be conveying to us something much deeper than just the simple spoken words. Let's look at a couple of different approaches. So look at number two. So this is the Gemara Maseches Makos that we've quoted virtually every shir on this capital. This Gemara Makos on page 24a, Chavdalet Amud Aleph, that goes through this capital line by line. So the capital like the following, Nivze Be'enav Nim'as, Ze Chizkiyo HaMelech. This is a reference to the King Chizkiyo. To the King Chizkiyo. Now, Chizkiyo is most famous for what? Bless you. Right. So the truth is, interestingly enough, so Chizkiyo HaMelech is most well known for the fact that the Gemara Maseches Brachos brings down that he refused to marry. He refused to marry. Why did he refuse to marry? Because he saw Baruch HaKodesh that he was going to have a child who was going to be a terrible Rasha, terribly evil, and therefore he figured better not to marry than to bring a child into this world. So that's the famous episode where the Gemara brings down, the Navi brings down, that Yeshayahu HaNavi goes to visit a dying Chizkiyo, Biker Cholim, and he says to Chizkiyo, you're going to die. Right? So not a good idea to do on a bigger Cholim visit in general, right? But okay, you're going to die. So Chizkiyo says to him, why? Says this episode highlights a very important principle. Why? And Yeshayahu tells him, because you never marry. So Chizkiyo says, but one second, what do you want from me? I saw Baruch HaKodesh, that I'm going to have a child who's going to be terribly evil. So I figured, better to go ahead and abstain from establishing a family than to go ahead and bring such a terrible rush into the world. So Yeshayahu says something profound. Yeshayahu says, V'hadei kavshei d'rachmona lamalach. Why do you involve yourself in God's business? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our job is not to figure out the future. Our job is to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us. So the fact that you could see that you're going to have a child, leave that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara actually ends off in a very interesting way. So Chizkiyo HaMelech says to the prophet Yeshayahu, okay, I'm a Kabel. He said, listen, you have a daughter. She's single. I'll marry her. So Yeshayahu says to him, it's too late for you. It's too late. So the Gemara actually isolates a very important principle that Chizkiyo responds. He says, I have a mesora from my father, so I'm a tradition from my forefathers, not really from his father, so we'll discuss his father in just a moment. Right? I have a tradition from my forefathers that afilu cherev chada munachas al tzavaro shel adam, even if a sharp sword is resting on a person's neck, al yimona es atzma min arachamim, that a person should not abstain from asking for divine compassion. Or in other words, what Chizkiyo said to Yeshayahu is, you might be the prophet, but apparently you missed the lesson on it's never too late. You missed the lesson on that for a Jew never throws in the towel. We throw in the towel, we give up when circumstances clearly have become what they are. But until the moment that ultimately our destiny, our fate is decided, a person is never permitted to go ahead and give up hope. And sure enough, so Yeshayahu is Mekabel, Chizkiyo marries his daughter, and they have a son by the name of Menashe. Menashe was one of the worst kings of the Jewish people. He reigns for a total of 55 years, a very long monarchy. For 33 of those, he's a terrible Rasha, introduces Avodah Zarah into every corner of the Jewish people. That's his thing. It's to put Avodah Zarah in every single Jewish home. Last 22 years, he tries to spark a tshuva movement, but he was so successful in his rituals, in his terrible introduction of idolatry, that no matter how hard he tried, he could not eradicate. Interestingly enough, the Gemara says that Menashe became such a real Baal Tshuva, that he sent his army to conduct house-to-house searches to make sure that people didn't have Avodah Zarah in their homes. But the Gemara says that the people were so entrenched in Avodah Zarah that I don't know exactly how they worked it out, but somehow they hid the idols behind the doors. It almost sounds like the Gemara says like the idol was in two parts, so that when they searched behind the door, So he literally was unable to eradicate it. It's actually a very moving Gemara. I'm sorry? That's not Shia. Unfortunately, this wasn't the one-time in history trick. Yeah, it might have been they learned it by then also. But the Gemara actually relates. I don't remember who the Gemara quotes, but the Gemara quotes one of the Tanoim was giving a shir to his Talmidim. One of the rabbis in the Talmud was giving a shir to his Talmidim. And tomorrow he said, in a joking fashion, tomorrow we'll learn about our friend Menashe. A reference to King Menashe, and he called him our friend in a disparaging fashion. Are there sheets? Are there not enough sheets back there? Sorry. Here, I have plenty. I just didn't put them all out. Maybe if I could trim these. So he mockingly said, I apologize, I'm sorry. I thought I put out the sheets. He mockingly said, tomorrow we'll learn about our friend Menashe. So the Gemara relates that night, King Menashe appeared to this Tana in a dream, and he asked him actually a halachic question. And the halachic question, interesting halachic question, that when you make hamotzi, what part of the bread should you take a bite from first? What part should you make hamotzi on? And the Tana didn't know the answer. So Menashe taught him, the halacha is you're supposed to do it from the crust, you know, the well-baked, part of the bread, that's considered to be the choiciest part of the bread, that's what you should make hamotzi on. So the Tana says to Menashe in his dream, he said, I don't understand. And he started calling him Rebbe Yumori. He said, I don't understand, if you're such a big Talmud Chacham. He said, how could it be that you were such a terrible Rasha? So Menashe said, you don't understand. He said, had you lived in the times that I lived, the Lashon of the Gemara is, you would have lifted your tunic even higher than mine so that you could run faster to go worship idolatry. Meaning you would have run ahead of me to go ahead and do idolatry. What Menashe was saying is, you don't understand the times that I lived in. You don't understand the desire. Well, the truth is, we look at these things and we think sometimes these people were out of their mind. Right? Are you kidding? You're giving up everything. You're doing these great for idols. All right, we don't understand this particular type. We don't understand this particular desire. But Menashe was trying to explain to this Tana that, you know, you look at me in such a terrible and disparaging fashion, but you don't understand the nisyonos with which I had to live. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech, back to number two. So the Gemara says, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Shegirer Atzamos Aviv. That what did he do? As they were taking his father's bones for burial. Now, by the way, whether Atzamos here means bones or whether it means body could be two different things. We know that in biblical times, what often happened was bodies were placed in a, I guess you'd call it like a burial cave. You could go actually, if you go to the kever of Shimon HaTzadik in Eastern Yerushalayim. So right next to the grave of Shimon HaTzadik, there's something that's called the Ma'ara of the Sanhedrin HaKatan. It's a massive burial cave. So what they used to do is, they would go and they would put bodies in caves, right? Literally like on a slab in a cave. The bodies would decompose. They would then gather the bones. And then they would bury the bones in family plots. That's why, for example, in halacha, there's a concept of likur atzamos. Likur atzamos means that on the day that you gather the bones of a relative, for whom you would not be obligated to mourn, there's almost like quasi shiva that's observed during that day. So what does that mean, likur atzamos? So we think about it if you have to move a grave from one place to another. But the truth is, certainly in earlier times, this was much more common, where I guess because of lack of space, family burial plots couldn't accommodate entire bodies, so instead you'd wait for bodies to decompose, you'd go ahead and you'd gather the bones, and you'd bury the bones in a family plot. The jugs, right? Right? Ossuaries, right? That's the name for it. Right. Thank you. Right. So whether it means that his father's body or his father's bones, I don't know. It doesn't really matter for our purposes today. But the point is, on the way to burying his father, the Gemara says, now remember, Chizkiyahu's father was Ahaz, right, who was also a terrible, terrible Rasha. So on the way to go ahead and bury his father, he drank his father's bones, b'mita shel chavalim. B'mita shel chavalim. Mita shel chavalim literally means what? A bed of ropes. A bed of ropes. Which has to do, the image that Rashi is conveying is that as he's dragging his father's bones to burial, he's dragging them on the ground. So in a very disparaging fashion of dealing with his father's remains. So what does that mean? So the Gemara is commenting over here, Nivza be'inav nim'as. What's an example of someone for whom a base person is despised in his eyes? The Gemara gives the example of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who dealt with his father's remains in a disrespectful fashion, purposely, we'll discuss why, disrespected his father's remains because his father, his own father, was such a terribly base person. Okay. Ve'esireh Hashem yichabed. And what does it mean that a person who honors the God-fearing? Zeh Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. This refers to Yehoshaphat, the king of the area of Yehuda. Shebeshah Shehaisa Ro'a Tamid Chacham. Because at a time when he would see a Tamid Chacham, Hayomed Mikiso, he would get up from his chair. Umechabko, he would hug him. Umenashko, he would kiss him. Vikorelo, and he would call Tamid Chacham, Avi, Avi, my father, Rabbi, Rabbi, my teacher, or my right, Mari, Mari, my teacher. So here you have, so Yehoshaphat would go ahead and respect the Tamid Chachamim, the Asirah Hashem Yichabeit, those who fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tamid Chachamim, he would give such incredible cover to. You know, it's interesting, as an aside, you know, the Gemara Maseches Megillah explains, how do we know that you have to stand up for a Sefer Torah? How do we know? Ah, oh, excellent. So it's such a wild Gemara. The Gemara says, because if you have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham, right, mipnei lohum deha, if you have to stand up for a Talmud Chacham, then of course what? You have to stand up for the Torah itself. So isn't that amazing? That the kavod that we give to a Sefer Torah is learned out from the kavod that we give to a Talmud Chacham. It's difficult, you know, we live in a day and age where the truth is we're almost taught to disrespect authority, right? The whole chap of the culture we live in is to find holes, to find imperfections in our leaders. The truth is Judaism beat it to the punch because Torah already tells us all the imperfections of our leaders. So we don't walk around with this image that the people who we look up to are perfect. We just look at them as people who are trying to further perfect themselves. But the point that the Rashi is pointing out, the Gemara is pointing out over here, is that Nivza be'einav nimas, that's Chizkiyahu, who again, a base person is despised in his eyes, who literally dragged his father's remains on the ground as a way of showing his displeasure with his father's actions, the Esireh Hashem Yechabed, and ultimately respects or honors the God fearing Yehoshaphat, who has this incredible display of honor towards Talmidei Chachamim. Yes. You're saying one is much easier than the other. Right? So, the only reason you're saying it is because of the examples the Gemara brings. But should I leave aside the examples for just a moment, they really are two sides of the same coin. I honor those who go ahead and heed the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I despise those who don't. You're right. The examples of the Gemara are a little bit strange. What Chizkiyahu did clearly took much more... We'll discuss what it took, because it's not a pasha thing either. The fact that he dragged his father's remains all over the street, it's a fascinating insight. But you're right, when you put them side by side, what Chizkiyahu did seemed to be much more difficult than what Yehoshaphat did. But leaving aside the examples, you could equate them as sister concepts. Yes? So we'll discuss that. Let me reframe that question. The question really is going to be, what is it that Chizkiyahu hoped to accomplish through this incredible public degradation of his father's remains? Good. Good. Excellent. We're going to see that. Yes?
I mean, isn't it like a respect the king, even if he's a rasha, just because he's the king and he's his brother.
So he
has a certain standing that, like, a regular person could never have done such a thing.
Correct. Correct. Right. So we're going to spend a little bit. So let's actually look at number three. Let's try, because it's troubling. I'll tell you why else it's troubling. Why else is it troubling? Leaving aside Chizkiyahu for just a moment. Why is this troubling? Okay, good. Keep it up. Leaving aside the specific example of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, what's troubling about the way the Gemara seems to understand what David HaMelech is saying? Okay, but we're Jews. That's what we do. We are exceptionally judgmental. And the truth is, all kidding aside, sometimes it's not such a bad thing. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss that. You know, sometimes the world has become, well, we'll discuss this, but a little bit too parith. Sometimes you have to be milchik surflations. You can't spend your life being parith. You have to choose a side. So, but we'll discuss that. What's intriguing about this... Right. These are very extreme. The concept, even... Right. The concept also of just being, just in a general idea of nivze be'enav nim'as, of despising a base person, despising anyone, or despising anything, is a very strong word. A very strong word. So, let's take a look at number three. Just keep that in the back of your mind. So the Gemara says the following. So Rashi says, Nivza be'enam, nim'as, hanim'as la'akadosh baruch hu, someone who is disgusted by God, or who is disgusting in God's eyes. How do you know who's disgusting in God's eyes? So the assumption is that, I'm sorry? Right. Although here, it's a little bit easier because I'm talking about Avodah Zarah. So something that would consider to be repulsive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nimas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hu Nivza Be'enav Shel Adam. So whatever is despicable to God becomes despicable to me. So Rashi spells it out. Zeh Chizkiyahu, this refers to Chizkiyahu, She Nivza Haya Be'enav Aviv, whose own father became despicable in his eyes, She Nimas Ba'avodas Kochavim, because his father became soiled with idolatry, became putrid with idolatry. Shagirat's, okay, so look at number four. So the question, of course, becomes, let's analyze this for a moment. Look, seizing on the Chizkiyahu story for just a moment. What is it that Chizkiyahu hoped to accomplish by dragging his father's remains through the street? So take a look at number four. So the Marasha writes in number four, Kedei sheyusru harishoyim. So the Marasha understands that what Chizkiyahu was trying to do was to set a public example. You think you're going to walk around, you know, it's interesting, the Torah, when it discusses those who worship idolatry, so the Torah uses lashon that a person worships idolatry, and they say, ki bishriris libi eilech. Right? I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to do whatever I want. No one's going to tell me what to do. I'm going to do whatever I want, and you know what? There won't be any repercussions. So, according to the Marasha, Chizkiyahu did what he did. Why? That the general populace should see, here is what happens to Ovde Avodah Zarah. And even if you are the king, you are not above the law. And if it's this level of degradation that happens to you in this world, we can only imagine what is waiting for you with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So according to the Marasha, and by the way, we have this idea in Halacha, what happens after a person is executed by Beis Din? What happens if a person commits some kind of crime that's punishable by death? So Beis Din stones him, or Beis Din decapitates him, whatever they do. Right? What happens afterwards? What do? We hang the body. We hang the body. Right? We hang the body for a day. Right? Until nightfall. Why? V'chala am yiru v'yishmu. Because let people see what happens when you transgress the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is there as a public deterrent. Yes, very brutal, very brutal, very difficult. But nevertheless, sometimes the best way that people learn is by seeing, by ultimately some kind of physical or tangible deterrent. So according to the Marasha, the dragging of Chizkiyahu's remains all over the place was to serve as a deterrent for those who think that they could worship idolatry unchecked. Okay, that's the Marasha. If you take a look, the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, which also discusses this idea, goes in a little bit of a different direction. So the Gemara says, Nivza be'enav nim'as zeo chizkiyo melech Yehuda shegirer atzamos aviv amita shachavala. My time. So the Gemara says, why did Chizkiyo do this? So the Gemara answers, ki hechi ditehevi lekapara le'avua. So others say, no, it wasn't as a deterrent, a public deterrent. It wasn't so that those who worship idolatry should get scared because look what happens to all the Avodah Zarah. It was to be a kapara for his father. What does that mean? It should be an atonement for his father. The Chizkiyo HaMelech felt that if his father would suffer this degree of public humiliation, even posthumously, even after his death, this would serve as some kind of atonement for the sin he committed. Yes. But Achaz, his father, didn't do the best he could do.
Right, because he could do the best he could and trust that Hashem will take care of his father.
Oh, that's the problem. Hashem is going to take care of his father. That's exactly the point. Chizkiyo HaMelech is trying to ameliorate the punishment that is coming to his father. What he's trying to do is ultimately take away from some of the divine justice that he knows his father is in store for. His father was the king of the Jewish people, and he set an example of worshipping idolatry. He led multitudes of people astray. Who knows what kind of punishment is waiting for him? So Chizkiyo, in an act of love for his father, tries to ameliorate and lessen the punishment coming to his father by heaping shame and humiliation on his father's memory in this world so as to lessen the punishment in the next world. Well, we'll discuss, by the way, that they actually don't have to be mutually exclusive, meaning sometimes with one act, you can accomplish multiple things. This could serve as a deterrent for the general masses who think they're going to worship idolatry unchecked. It could also serve to go ahead and somehow ameliorate the punishment that he feels is coming to his father. So, but according to this approach of the Gemara, it's actually, Chizkiyo's dramatic activity is actually motivated out of a sense of love and duty and care for his father. Question. Yes. Right.
It does make sense that
thinking ahead, right. Maybe this is part of his personality. It's an excellent point. Excellent point. Yes. I'm sorry. It's an act of love, but at the end of the day, look what he's doing. Look what he's doing. I mean, you can't escape the fact that he's dragging his father's remains in the street, which clearly bespeaks the fact that he's showing the populace what my father did was despicable. He's my father. I love him. I feel like I want to take care of his neshama, despite the fact that he was a terrible Rasha. So I'm heaping the pain and humiliation upon his remains in this world. I don't think in any way it diminishes Chizkiyo's distaste for the act. Right, he's not making a scene in Mishnayos for his father Shloshim over here. You know, he's dragging his father's remains through the streets. One last approach. Take a look at number 6. So Rashi in Sanhedrin says the following. Rashi says, "Nifsa be'enav nimas b'tehilim k'siv mi'ala b'har Hashem nichi karay." So look at the last line in Rashi. "Ulechavod atzmo lo chosh." Now here's the amazing part. Says Rashi in this, which is that Chizkiyo HaMelech did not worry about his own kavod. Now, what does that mean? When you drag the remains of a monarch in the street, at the end of the day, what does that really do?
It diminishes his own stature.
It erodes the sanctity of the monarchy. Right? It's hard for us to appreciate this as well because we're used to living in democracy. But remember, in a monarchy, the king is the most important person in the entire nation. Remember, you know, the Gemara tells us, the Mishnayos tell us, that Hakel, right? Remember at the Sukkis, after every Shemitah year, there was a massive gathering in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. And essentially it was a shir. It was a mass communal learning. So ultimately, who did the teaching? the king. Right? It wasn't the Kohen Gadol. It wasn't this guy. In fact, the Mishnah says that they would pass the Sefer Torah from person to person to person, and it was the Kohen Gadol who ultimately would hand it off to the king, because the king was the most important person in the entire nation. So says Rashi that Chizkiyahu HaMelech, he must have understood that by dragging his father's remains throughout the streets, ultimately he's going to be denigrating his own kavod, because he is the one who now wears the mantle of monarchical kavod. But nevertheless, says Rashi, what? In the calculation of what has to be done, his personal kavod did not play a role. My own kavod will take a hit. My own status will take a hit. What has to be done has to be done. So if we take this all together, we have a number of different approaches to understanding Chizkiyahu HaMelech's activities. Either according to the Mashan number 4, that he does it as a public deterrent. Either according to number 5, he does it as a kapara for his father. Or as number 6, he does what has to be done despite the hit that his own covet is going to take. So if we take this all together, we emerge with a very interesting understanding of David HaMelech's approach. Now this really only focuses on the first part of the phrase. So what does it mean? Nivza be'enav nim'as. Literally, a base person is despised in his eyes. What David HaMelech is teaching us, working backwards, is you have to stand up for what's right, even if what? Even if it comes at a personal expense. Very often in life, standing up for what is correct comes with a lot of personal collateral damage. We learn from Chizkiyahu HaMelech, L'kavod atzmo lo chash. In life, you have to do what's right, and even if it means that you're going to take a little bit of a hit for it, you have to be willing to absorb that collateral damage. Next, ultimately, when you stand up to those who are doing something wrong, at the end of the day, you will benefit them. Sometimes we're too nervous to take a stand against someone who is going ahead and doing something wrong because we feel we're going to hurt their feelings, going to get them upset. But the truth is, we see that ultimately, when you stand up to someone who's doing something wrong, they are the beneficiaries of your moral courage as well. It's the same way that when David HaMelech goes ahead and he drags his father's remains throughout the city. So ultimately, who's benefiting from that? According to number 5, the Gemara, his father. That's the kapara. You know, there's a mitzvah, ochiach tochiach hasamisecha. Judaism does not believe in a live and let live policy. We do not believe in the notion that you could do whatever you want, and as long as it's infringing upon me, then as long as it's not infringing upon me, yegizunde, do whatever you want. We don't believe in that notion. It's the same way that we would never say that by our children. If I see my child doing something wrong, I never, chas v'shalom, would say, you know, tatala mamala, good luck, just, you know, whatever, don't stick your finger in any sockets. But, you know, otherwise, whatever you do in life, it's okay. We would never do that. That would be a shirking of parental responsibility. So we feel a mutual responsibility, a din of arfas towards one another. That's why, ochech tochech esamisecha, if you see me doing something wrong, you have to tell me, I have to tell you. That's what mutual responsibility means. Unless you think David HaMelech says, but I'm going to hurt someone's feelings, I'm going to fracture the relationship. At the end of the day, when you try to correct the wrong that someone else is doing, they, the perpetrator, will ultimately be the beneficiary of your intervention. The same way that when Chizkiyahu HaMelech drags his father's remains throughout the city, you think that was a simple thing? You think that Chizkiyahu HaMelech didn't love his father? I don't know, but I would venture to say the same way that parents love their children, even when children don't do what they're supposed to, there is a natural connection between children and their parents also, even if the parents are not exactly the paradigm of righteousness. But he understood that he had to do what he had to do precisely because he loved his father. Sometimes standing up to the sinner, sometimes going ahead and intervening when someone is doing something wrong, is not because a person desires conflict, it's just the opposite. It's because a person loves the perpetrator. And if you love the perpetrator, you want to try to get them on the right path. And lastly, when you go ahead and you stand up for that which is right, and you despise that which is wicked, like the Maharsha said, you set the right example for others. At the end of the day, so much of our moral sensitivities are gleaned by what we see around us. And if we see others standing up for that which is right, that makes a roshem. That makes an impression on us as well. So again, according to this first approach, nivza be'enav nimas, one more time to review, really synthesizing and putting together the Maharsha, the Gemara, and Rashi, but in the reverse order. What does it mean to despise the base person. Stand up for what's right, even if it's at personal expense. When you stand up to those who are doing something wrong, understand that at the end of the day, you are benefiting them, even though it doesn't feel that way initially. And number three, when you stand up against that which is wrong, you set the correct example for others. All right, this leads us now to our second approach. Take a look at number seven. The Ibn Ezra writes something amazing here. The Ibn Ezra writes, he has a radically different understanding of this pasuk. See, he says, Nivze kashur be'enav gam nimas. V'hatam, so watch this. So the Ibn Ezra says that everyone else, meaning the Gemara and Rashi and the Marasha that we saw before, was reading this phrase as comprised of two different parts. Part A, Nivza be'enav nimas, a base person is despised in his eyes, and part B, Ve'esirei Hashem yichabed, but honors those who fear God. Says the Ibn Ezra, it's not two parts, it's one part, it's one statement. So what's the pshat? Listen to this. He says, V'hatam, ki oved Hashem, kol mitzvah sheshamar, v'chol tov sheasa, nivza v'nakel hu be'enav, kineged mashu chayiv lasos, lichvod boro, v'kacha mishpat hatzadikim, sheyivakshu la'alos al-ma'alas ha'kodesh mimenu, v'nichbad v'amar, yichabed kineged nivza. So Ibn Ezra says something amazing. He says, what's the pshat? Nivza be'enav nim'as. So the Ibn Ezra says, it's not talking about others, it's talking about myself. Nivza be'enav nim'as. In my own eyes, how do I view myself? I view myself as underaccomplished. Nivza be'enav nim'as. Right? Ultimately, what am I? I'm a base person. What have I really accomplished with my life? What have I really done? If I measure my potential versus my actualized, right? If I measure my potential versus my kinetic energy, how much of my kohos, how many of my kohos have I actually brought to fruition? How much have I actually done compared to what I have the potential to do? So the Ibn Ezra writes, that's what it means. V'chol tov sha'asa nivza b'nei kahu be'enav. I've done a little bit here and there, but you know what? The little bit that I have done pales in comparison to what I am actually capable of doing. But ultimately, he says, V'esyurei Hashem yichabed. Esyurei Hashem yichabed, he says, V'kacha mishpat hatzadikim, sheyivakshu la'alos al ma'alas kadosh mimenu. V'esyurei Hashem yichabed, do you know what I ultimately respect? I respect those who are Yirei Hashem. And what does it mean to be those who are Yirei Hashem? Those who always aspire to be more. So according to the Ibn Ezra, Nivza be'enav nim'as is a reflexive statement that ultimately a base person is despised in my eyes. And who is the base person whom I despise? It's me. It's a little heavy. But I despise the fact that I have not accomplished what I need to accomplish. I despise the fact that by now I should have been such a great tzaddik. But I'm not. V'esyirei Hashem yichabed. You know who I do honor? I honor those who are on a constant trajectory of growth. I honor those who are the mevakshim and the mevakshos. I honor those ultimately who realize that they can never rest on their accomplishments, but must always be surging for more. And if you look at number eight, Dradak highlights the same basic idea. Dradak writes, 8 Aleph, Nivza be'enav nim'as, V'siper mimidosav hatovos od. Ki af apishu holich tamim, ufoal tzedek, v'dover emes. Now, Dradak says something very interesting. Dradak says, remember, this phrase comes on the heels of many positive attributes. Remember, the same way we're learning these one at a time to build on them. So David Amel says like this, I might be a holich tamim, poel tzedek, dover emes bilvavo, lo raga, all the wonderful midos that we have spoken about until now. Nevertheless, eino misko evazeh. Despite the fact that I have many good traits and I've done many good things, I don't become arrogant. Elo nivza be'enav v'nimas. Rather, in my own eyes, I'm a nothing. V'choshev bilvavo, ki lo ya'aseh achas mine elef, mima sheyesh alav chovet la'asos lechvod boro. Because at the end of the day, deep down, all of us are saddled with an incredible and overwhelming truth that we have not done 1/1,000 of what we are actually capable of doing. So says the Radak. Now the Radak is a little bit more tempered than the Ibn Ezra. Now, the Ibn Ezra is a little bit shtak, because the Ibn Ezra is mamish saying, I'm a nothing. The Radak is saying, I'm not a nothing. I've done a lot, because look at all the midos. Right, David HaMelech, I've been studying your Tehillim now for 8 weeks on one kapitel, and I've been taking each of those midos after each and every week. So I'm growing. I'm getting there. But you know what? At the end of the day, nivza be'en av nimas. I can reflect on what I've done, but I must accept the fact that at the end of the day, I am nowhere near where I need to be. Nivza be'en av nimas, that I haven't really accomplished, I haven't even hit the tip of the iceberg about what I have the ability to accomplish. He goes on, base, so what does it mean, the second phrase? Ve'esirei Hashem yichabed, hu nivza be'enav, listen to this, u'mechabed yirei Hashem, I might be lowly in my own eyes, and by the way, I just want to point out that lowly in your own eyes, you have to be very careful with this concept, because a person can't be lowly in, I'm only translating the words, but you can't be lowly in your own eyes, because if a person doesn't think anything of themselves, a person doesn't have good positive self-esteem, it's impossible to grow. Because the truth is, if you don't think that you're good and you don't think that you're special, then you don't think that you're deserving of a good and rewarding and fulfilling life. So it's a tightrope. On one hand, I'm nothing, but I happen to be a nothing who's a something. Meaning that I haven't accomplished 1/1,000 of what it is that I can, but I also know that I can. Meaning the fact that I know that I can grow, that I can be more, indicates that I recognize that I am a person capable of greatness. I accept the fact that I have not yet actualized it. I've done a lot of things, but those lot of things, not even the tip of the iceberg. So he goes on. Ve'esirei Hashem yichabed, hu nivza u'mechabed yirei Hashem, ki kol ha'tovo she'osa, hu eino choshvan l'klum, neged ma'she choshev she'esh la'asos. At the end of the day, I know that no matter what I've accomplished, it's nothing compared to what I can accomplish. But watch this. V'hatovos she'ya'aseh zulaso yechashvan l'dvarim gidolim. I have to think of my own accomplishments as what? As what? As nothing. But I'm not permitted to think of your accomplishments in those same way. See, here what the Radak is telling us is, in Judaism we have a double standard. We deal with ourselves as individuals one way, and we deal with others on a totally different scale. He says, V'yachshov sheyesh l'yirei Hashem zulaso ma'ale alav. As far as dealing with another Jew, you're a yirei Hashem. I'm not there yet, but you are a yirei Hashem. V'shehem yireim Hashem yoser mimenu, v'nosein lahem ma'ale alav u'mechabed osam. So listen to this. This is such a beautiful insight. See, he says, what's the danger of nivza ve'en of nimas? What's the danger ultimately of saying, well, I've accomplished nothing. I haven't actualized 1/1,000th of my potential. What's the danger in that? Well, if I'm like that, then the automatic assumption is what? Then you're like that, right? If I'm like that, we're all in the same boat. I'm like that, you're like that. David HaMelech says, no. Herein lies the double standard. Nivza ve'en av nimas. When it comes to relating to myself, I have to understand that I have not actualized even a 1/1,000th of my potential. No matter what I've done, it's not enough. And if I'm honest with you, for all honestness, we know this is true, there could be so much more that I'm doing, that I'm living, that I'm being. But how do I relate to others? Ve'esirei Hashem yichabed. When I look at another Jew, you're a yirei Hashem. You've accomplished so much. You've done so much. You've grown in such exceptional ways. For the simple reason, by the way, that you can never chart someone else's growth. You never know what someone else's actualized greatness ultimately looks like. So David HaMelech says, the way I have to relate to others is that everyone else is an accomplished Yirei Hashem. And therefore, I'm going to be mechabed you for the fact that you have attained Yirei Hashem status. Me? I'm not there yet. For me, nivza be'enav inimas. For me, I'm a little disappointed and maybe even a little bit disgusted that I haven't gotten my life to where it needs to be. You, Yirei Hashem Yichabed. Of course, the interesting part of this is, right, so we're all viewing ourselves in one way, but we view the world and we view those around us in a radically different way. Yes? Right, so I think that there's a fine. I think that's why the Radak is a little bit more tempered than the Ibn Ezra. What he's saying is, when I say my accomplishments are worth nothing, what it's saying is, you know, I'll give you the perfect example. I mean, it's a crude mashal, but you know, if a 25-year-old person comes along and writes down on a piece of paper and writes 2 + 2 = 4, right, nobody's going to give them a shkayach for that. Right. But if the, I don't know what age do children learn that, if should be homework, right? But you know, if the 3-year-old writes 2 + 2 =, oh, it's godless. Right? Accomplishments are relative. So what David HaMelech is saying is great. You've become a holy chacham, and Paul said, the David HaMelech said, great. But is that really where you should be holding your life? Or should you already be somewhere else? So he's not taking away from the fact that I've done the accomplishments. But are the accomplishments that you've accrued really relative to where you're actually holding in life, or have what I've accomplished actually really over here when I should be actually over here? It's a tough pill to swallow. It's a very tough pill to swallow. But I'll tell you, if taken in the right way, it's the ultimate energizing statement. Because David HaMelech, you see, if there was no hope for us, then David HaMelech wouldn't even bother to say it. The only reason you say this is because you believe that people can be more. If you believe that people can be more, it's empowerment. It's okay, I'm not there yet, but you know what? I have the ability to get there. And that's an incredible yisod. Yeah, it hurts a little bit. It hurts a little bit, and it stings a little bit in here, because the truth is, I think many of us think to ourselves, we're trying hard, and many of us are already pushing ourselves already to the limit. And David HaMelech comes along and tells us, you know, it's not enough. You have to push yourself more. And we want to say to David HaMelech, what do you want from me? Right, you're the Mashiach Hashem. Great, Shkayach, you're David HaMelech. But then again, if you're honest with yourself, David HaMelech became David HaMelech because he made the choices that he made, because he pushed himself in the way that he did. The beautiful part about our heroes and the people we look up to is they're all self-made men and women. None of them came to it. It wasn't just that they were endowed with this Ruach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that just put everything up. They worked for it. So David HaMelech, I think, has every single right to say to us, you've accomplished a lot. Not enough. Not enough. If you look in number 9, to the Al-Sheikh also. The Al-Sheikh echoes the same, pretty much the same exact sentiment as the Radak, and the Al-Sheikh writes the following. He says, V'hu ma'amar atani, actually quotes the Mishnah and Avos. He says, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim ve'enata bali de'aveira. Ultimately, no, right, look at 3 things and you will come to do an aveira. So the Mishnah, one of the things the Mishnah says, Dayin me'ayin ba, so where did you come from? So the Gemara says, Tipa srucha, from a putrid drop, and ultimately we go back to the earth. V'hu ma'amarenu b'veira ha-Mishnah, ki levatel ha-gaiva hu istakel el sofa, ki sofa hu ofer v'rima v'tumea u'bema yiska, v'al ze yomar po, nivza be'enav, v'al ze amar nim'as, sheyiye neged enav bo'o midavar mos. So interestingly enough, the Al-Sheikh, a little bit of a different approach. The Al-Sheikh says that, why does David HaMelech use the word nim'as? Nim'as, right? Nim'as gives us a reference to the Mishnah in Avos, right? That ultimately makes reference to the fact that we all have such simple and humble beginnings. So again, says the Al-Sheikh, nivza be'enav nim'as, is to paint this picture of, don't get carried away with your accomplishments, no matter how great they are, because they don't nearly begin to measure where you actually should be. And if he writes, la'anayin beiz, ulabal yimashech miyoso nivza be'enav, gam shagam chaver ye nivza be'enav, and if you think to yourself, well, if I'm so unaccomplished and so lowly, then what? then that must mean that others must be in the same boat. Okay, so what we have over here is essentially really two different approaches, but based on the same yisod, which is that understanding that as nivza be'enav nim'as, the esyirei Hashem yichabed is really one cohesive thought. So according to the Ibn Ezra, everybody subscribes to the same basic idea that nivza ve'enav nim'as essentially means, what am I? What am I? A base person is despised in his eyes. The base person that we are describing, according to the Ibn Ezra, Radak and the Al-Sheikh, is me. So according to the Ibn Ezra, he then goes on to say, ve'esri Hashem yichabed, I extol those who go ahead and are on a constant trajectory of growth. According to the Radak and the Al-Sheikh, David HaMelech is trying to balance the equation. On one hand, I look at myself in my own eyes as an under-accomplished base person. Have I accomplished things in life? Yes. Is it enough? No, it's not nearly enough. And even though I've assimilated into my persona all of these traits that we spoke about beforehand, it's not enough. There's so much more that I need to do, so much more to the person I need to be. But lest you think that you should go ahead and apply that same standard to someone else, no, can't do that. The esirei Hashem yichabed. When it comes to how we relate to others as the perfect paradigmatic examples of Yiras Hashem. You're doing just exactly what you're supposed to be doing, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of you. Because it's not my place to think of you as anything less than the paradigm of perfection. Even though I know that I am so far from that. Yes? Exactly. That's the point.
Well, I'm seeing the ladder of learning and that decline of the ladder of learning.
100%. But you know what? The Jew, what does David HaMelech say? Ashrei Adam Mefachid Tamid. Ashrei Adam Mefachid Tamid. You know, I want to tell you, it's one of the hardest lessons of Judaism, that Judaism, Torah, is not about feeling good. And I know it sounds strange. I should really shut off the recorder. And it's not about feeling comfortable. The thinking Gene of Soloveitchik writes in his introduction to Lonely Man of Faith. He says, the believer is always lonely. The believer is always lonely. Because the believer understands that everything in life is constantly shifting. The believer understands that just when I feel that I get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's when I feel so distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The believing man, woman, is always anxious. Judaism is about perpetual healthy anxiety, not disorder anxiety, healthy anxiety. It's the same way. Think about it. Isn't everything, every meaningful relationship in life is filled with constant anxiety, right? If a person has children, right? A parent, doesn't matter how old children are, a person is always filled with anxiety. That anxiety might become more conscious, more subconscious, right? Even in a marriage, in any relationship, there's always some level of healthy anxiety that's associated there. So that Kaddish Baruch Hu, Ashrei Adam Mefachid Tamid. Yes. Being Jewish means, people think it's being filled with guilt. It's not guilt. It's anxiety. Because it's that anxiety, yes, that always says, should I be doing more? Can I be more? How can I improve myself? How can I push myself? How can I make sure that I'm maximizing every single moment? And the push from that comes from a healthy anxiety that I'm not doing enough. That's exactly what David HaMelech is saying. It's a hard lesson because, again, it's so countercultural. Because if you ask people, what's the goal in life? People will tell you, normally what? Right? To be happy. It's not our goal. I mean, we believe happiness is a result of meaningful living. If you lead a meaningful life, you will be happy. But the pursuit of happiness is not the ends to which we aspire, nor is the pursuit of comfort. We know that meaningful life comes with constant anxiety, constant loneliness, but we embrace it because we know that the meaning that will come from it is so overwhelming and overpowering that it's worth it. Yes?
Learning that, we learn the humility that we're supposed to have, because if
going up two rings and falling down one and going up again. That's what gives us the humility as Jews.
100%. Agreed. Agreed. Yes.
You're saying that God has to have very high aspirations for himself.
Correct.
Very high
aspirations for themselves.
But as for the other person, you cannot put your aspirations on another person.
You know, I'll tell you, there's a very important Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Have a makdim b'shlom kol adam." Be the first to greet every person. So Shem Shnefel Hirsch writes, he says, "Why?" Says why, you know? But what about I said hello to you first last time, right? Maybe you should go ahead and say hello to me. And Rav Hirsch says something I'm going to tell you right now. It's going to forever change your life. Rav Hirsch said, expect nothing from people. Don't live your life expecting things from people, because if you spend your life expecting things from people, there's one thing that's for sure, which is you will be terribly disappointed. Instead, says Rav Hirsch, make it happen. Set the example. Yankel's passing me on the street, and I said hello to him first, the last seven times, and I also helped him change his tire, and I cut his grass, and I did all this stuff. The least if he does give me shalom aleichem, don't wait for Yankel. Make it happen. Hopefully Yankel will learn. So 1,000%, and that's what David HaMelech is saying over here, is I don't have a right to put expectations on you. What you're going to be as a person, that's between you and the Ribono Shel Olam. I have an obligation to look at you as a paradigm of perfection. You have the obligation to look at me as a paradigm. We both look at ourselves as individuals in a different way. But correct, we do not put our expectations on other people. Right? We also know this is a very fine line in parenting. Right? There's a difference between guiding a child, which is the obligation of a parent, and trying to live vicariously through a child, which is an ultimate shirking of parental responsibility. As Shlomo says, "Chanuch l'na pidako," I have to figure out how to guide without putting my own things on your shoulders. All right, let's look at one last approach in the 2 minutes we have left. So, look at number 10. So, interestingly enough, Rashi points out, this is our third and last approach. There actually points out, Nivza be'inav nim'as, Mishu nivza berishaso, nim'as be'inav shel tzad. This is what Rashi really said before. That someone who is disgusting or debased in his wickedness, ultimately is considered to be repulsive in the eyes of the righteous. So, what I was trying to hint at before, was to me, what's most intriguing about this particular line, is the notion that David HaMelech seems to be espousing the idea of hate the sinner. Hate the sinner. Now, interestingly enough, in Judaism, we don't normally subscribe to that idea. In fact, if you take a look at number 11, there's an interesting Gemara Maseches Brachos. The Gemara says like this: Hano Bar Yone Dahave Bishvivuse Drabi Meir. There were Bar Yone are like ruffians, no good nicks, right? There are a couple of really bad people who were living in the neighborhood of Rabbi Meir, Vahava Kamatsaru Le Tuva, and they made Rabbi Meir's life very difficult. What happened? Hava Kaboy Rabbi Meir Rachami Alayhu Ki Hechi Dilemusu. Rabbi Meir davened that they should die. Amra Le Bruya Divisu. So his wife Bruya came to him and she said, "My Daitech." Now "My Daitech" means what? "My Daitech" is a nice way, like only a wife could say to a husband, right? What are you thinking? Right? What's the matter with you? Right? What are you thinking? So Bria said, "So, Rabbi Meir, my husband, you're probably davening for them to die. You think you have a precedent based on the words of David HaMelech. What does David HaMelech say? Yitamu chatoim, right? Let sin cease to exist. So let the sin die. So you're davening for the death of these sinners. Miksiv chotim chatoim ksiv. So Bria gives her husband a little lesson, and she says, you know, David HaMelech doesn't say Yitamu chotim min haaretz. David HaMelech doesn't say that the sinners should cease to exist. Rather, what does he write? Chatoim. He says, let sin cease to exist. Va'od shafir l'seifa dikra. And she said to him, I look at the end of the verse, Urishoim od einam, and the wicked will be no more. Kevan diyitamu chatoim. Once sin ceases, Urishoim od einam. So what was Bria saying to her husband? My husband, don't hate the sinner, but rather what? Hate the sin. And don't daven for the removal of the sinner, daven for the removal of the sin. Ella, so what's the advice she gives him? Ella, boi rachami iluyahu, but rather daven for divine compassion on their behalf, dilahadju b'tshuva. Daven for them that they should do tshuva, urushaim odenam. Daven that they should do tshuva, the sin will be removed, and therefore the wicked will no longer exist. So the Gemara ends up, Rabbi Meir took his wife's advice, boi rachami iluyahu, he davened on their behalf, vahadju b'tshuva. And they ultimately did tshuva. So interestingly enough, in number 12, the Maharsha, we don't have time to do it inside, but the Maharsha writes, the Maharsha doesn't understand this, because he says, don't we have a principle of, right, hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyira shamayim. You could daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all different kinds of things. You could daven for your health, you could daven for your parnas, you could daven for big and little. But, when it comes to matters of my own personal spirituality, that's up to me. So the Maharsha, he actually ends off with a kasha. He says, I don't know how to answer this. I don't understand how Bruria was advocating for Rabbi Meir to daven that they should be chozer b'tshuva, when no one could daven for you to be chozer b'tshuva. That you have to do yourself. So number 13, the Ben Yehoyada comments, and he says on this the following. He says that, what do you see from this Gemara? You see from this Gemara something amazing, which is that you can daven for people to do tshuva. You see, the Maharsha's question is predicated on the fact that he takes as a feed the complete, as a conclusion, that only people could help themselves do tshuva. The Ben Yehoyada understands that the take-home message from this Gemara is what? You can daven for other people to do tshuva. It could be that the process is only actualized if a person makes the conscious decision on their own. That might be true. But at the end of the day, you could daven for a person that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should intervene on their behalf. God, help this person ultimately, as we say, see the light and go to the process of tshuva. Whether they do it or not, that's a personal decision. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to whatever degree you could pull the strings, help it happen. So what's interesting about this is the following. What comes out from this Gemara? What comes out from this Gemara? Right. Okay, well, because after this Gemara is something simpler. Rabbi Meir was wrong. Rabbi Meir was wrong. How is Rabbi Meir wrong? People are salvageable. Rabbi Meir felt that people are not salvageable. That at the end of the day, these guys are Rishoyim, once a Rasha, always a Rasha, they're unsalvageable. Bruria said to him, his wife said to him, not true. No such thing as a person beyond salvation. Whether people ultimately find that salvation is a different issue. But no person is beyond salvation. Every single person is salvageable. So maybe using this Gemara, we can understand David HaMelech's words in one last way, which is, Nivza be'enav nim'as. We go through life. We go through life. And what do we see? We see people who are nivza. We see people who are base. We see people who are void of holiness. We see people who, let's just say, we see people who what? Right? I wasn't going to say that, but alright, right, good. we should talk afterwards, right? We see people who seem to have no redeeming milas to them. We see people who we say, you're taking up space in this world. We see people, yes, even like Chaya said, we say to ourselves, you're so worthless that it almost seems like the world would be better without you. What do you bring to the table of humanity? Nivza be'enav nim'as. So David HaMelech would say, but you know what? Ve'es yirei Hashem yichabed. Part of the goal in life is to realize that contained within every nivza is a potential yirei Hashem. Contained within every broken kli, within every broken vessel, is the potential for some type of beautiful, beautiful vessel. The same nivza, with some intervention and manipulation, could sometimes become the most beautiful Yirei Hashem. So David HaMelech is teaching us how to ultimately relate to the outside world, that sometimes it's those who we see are so void. Like Rabbi Meir, we look at Rabbi Meir, we say, what good are you? Or maybe even worse, the world will be better off without you. Nivza be'inam nimas. But you know what? Sometimes our job in life is to be able to see through the nivze exterior and to sometimes see that even contained within the most base, seemingly useless human vessels lies a beautiful, yet dormant, untapped kedusha. Right, stop over here. I don't know.